Alrighty folks, and welcome to the Chronicle Podcast Channel, episode 22, The Establishment of the Han Dynasty. So last time we were talking about the Chu Han contention and how Liu Bang finally won the known world in China at the time, and he established the Han Dynasty. So it was the year 202 BC, and this is when all this happened. And to be fair to Liu Bang, it was a great achievement. He went from just a lowly peasant to an emperor. He was the first man ever to accomplish this, but he won't be the last emperor to achieve this grand rise. Liu Bang is also known as Emperor Gaozu. So if you ever see Emperor Gaozu anywhere on anything you read, it's Liu Bang. Now, what did Liu Bang do, or Emperor Gaozu do, when he became emperor? It's quite a lot to be fair, and it ensured the prolonged existence of the Han Dynasty, which lasted roughly 400 years. But the way I think it's best to break it down is to follow the rest of the episode like this. Social reforms, political reforms, alongside military campaigns, and lastly, the court politics and that nasty business of succession. Now, I won't spend too much time on all of these features, as I don't want the episode to drag on with loads of names that I haven't mentioned yet, so I'll paint the most basic of pictures without going into too much detail. So you remember those days of Qin, where everyone was bound to pay very heavy taxes or face death? Well, to be honest, Liu Bang kinda liked that idea, as well as many other harsh policies under the Qin dynasty. But one of his advisors argued to the emperor, "But sire, if you rule your empire on horseback, how could you hope to keep it?" Impressed by these words, Liu Bang then decided to take it easy on everyone and went for a more Confucius-based state philosophy. This meant that the emperor now respected Confucius scholars, which he never did before, and there's even a story of one time when a scholar went to see him as the king of Han, not the emperor of Han yet, and he asked the guy for his hat. So the scholar, being faithful to Liu Bang and wanting to show kindness, he gave Liu Bang the hat, and to which the king of Han peed in it. But now, Confucianism was seen as the correct way to manage the empire that he had won. And Confucian scholars began to fill in some government positions. What did this mean for the working people? The peasantry, the backbone of society. The first thing it meant was that there was so much leniency in the laws, and the police state that Qin Shi Huang had established was now gone. That's one way to get the support of the people. But how could the emperor boost it even further? Haha, there we go. Less taxes! Everyone loves less taxes, so everyone obviously enjoyed that as well. The positive effect of lowering the taxes as well is that it allowed people to, you know, buy more stuff, so the Han economy actually improved under Liu Bang. So a thumbs up there for Liu Bang for achieving that. Now, I do need to mention this here as well. Confucian scholars would play a prominent role in later generations of the Han dynasty. And you'd be correct in thinking that they would be sure that they would make the Qin dynasty seem like the worst thing that humans ever produced. This is when we see the little disconnect in the histories here. Because Qin Shi Huang did build up the state system. He made a decent job of the bureaucracy. He built the wall, etc, etc, etc. But it is Liu Bang who benefits the most from all of this work, as he simply uses these systems and roads built by the Qin and just adapts them to the way he wants them. If it wasn't for what the Qin managed to accomplish, no matter how brutal the method they did it in, the Han Dynasty would have struggled so much more in the early days. So that's all I could really say when it comes to the peasantry and the social changes. Confucianism was becoming the state ideology and replacing that of the Qin. The Qin laws were getting used, but much more leniently, and taxes were lowered substantially. This brings me on to political reforms. Now Liu Bang, after winning the war against Xiang Yu, had to award his men who helped him get there, and he awards them with positions of power. Also, I didn't really mention this last time, but all of the previous warring states all rose up in rebellion alongside Xiang Yu and Liu Bang. So Liu Bang had to consider this as well. Now, what he did was put all of his closest men, people like Han Xin, Xiao He, Fan Kuai, Chen Ping, Zhang Liang, and Lu Wan, into the imperial government. And sometimes they were vassal kings of different territories within the empire too. The other previous kings were allowed to keep their titles also, but they were now vassals under Liu Bang. Now this arrangement would be fine as long as Liu Bang was alive. But what if he wasn't? And Liu Bang wasn't like Qin Shi Huang, he accepted death as a part of life. But memories of the war in states and the failure of the Zhou dynasty to keep their empire together was on everyone's mind, and in particular Liu Bang's. Now to solve this problem, Liu Bang was both patient and cunning. What he did was basically wait for any slight, any sign of insubordination, and any excuse to replace those who were supposed to be loyal to him with members of his own family. This strategy proved to be effective, and slowly, one by one, all of these men who were loyal to Liu Bang and helped him to become emperor were killed off under the slightest charges, and those vassal kings were all replaced as well with members of the Liu family, thus securing the dynasty's longevity. Now you'd be thinking, that's the reward for helping the guy? Death? That's harsh. And you're right, it is harsh. But the emperor was thinking long term. Any threats simply couldn't be accepted. The only guy who managed to keep his head was the close advisor to the emperor called Zhang Liang. But his son didn't share the same fate, and basically Empress Lu, after she assumes power after Liu Bang's death, she does away with many political rivals, and Zhang Liang's son was one of them. Now, some of those who were loyal to Emperor Gaozu initially did eventually try to rebel, because they could see the writing on the wall, they knew what was happening. But by then, it was too late. Liu Bang was watching everyone like a hawk, and he had an iron grip on power. The example I want to go and throw at you is the example given to us by the great general Han Xin. Han Xin always had a rather difficult relationship with Liu Bang, and Liu Bang was always wary of him. After all, he was the greatest military tactician around, and his ideas were better than Liu Bang's half the time. However, Han Xin could have been a great military genius, but he was a dummy when it came to court politics. And very soon after receiving these rewards for his services, Liu Bang started throwing accusations and gradually taking the general's power away from him. Han Xin, as you could imagine, felt like the emperor was being rather ungrateful for his services and plotted a rebellion. However, it was quickly found out and Han Xin was tricked into coming into Luoyang, where the emperor wasn't there to see him, but Empress Dowager Lu, as well as Xiao He. After Han Xin was captured, he appealed to Xiao He to speak to the emperor on his behalf and spoke of their previous friendship. However, Xiao He apparently replied, "We were friends, but I am more loyal to the throne than to my friends." And with that, Han Xin was dragged off and beheaded. Supposedly, he was said to have remarked in bitter irony that he, the most legendary military strategist ever, was outwitted by women. I mean, how could a woman outwit a man in a man's world? Now, why did he think this? The truth is that Liu Bang was actually on a military campaign against one of those other lords who were disloyal to the throne, and actually had no idea that this was happening. That being said, Xiao He knew that he was in a lot of trouble as well now. He ordered the death of the great general without authorization. So what should he do? Well, it was simple. He told one of the other great advisors, Lu Wan, to accuse him of embezzling taxes on his own little luxuries in front of Liu Bang, so there was then pretense to have him executed. Liu Bang must have been rather sad by the time he reached old age. All of the men who got him to the great position of power that he had got to had all been killed or were driven into hiding by his own suspicions or ideas to protect the future of the dynasty. But regardless, the tactic proved effective and had kept the Han dynasty going for a rather successful run. The next area I need to focus on is the military. Because like I said previously, Emperor Gaozu went on military campaigns against his subordinates for disloyalty. And then after defeating them, he replaced them with his own family members. The Xiongnu to the north, however, were totally different. They had ravaged the Chinese for centuries now, but at least there was now a great wall between them. So how did the wall stop them? Well, it did stop them sometimes, but there was other times where it didn't. It acted more like a trading barrier after a while, to be fair. Regardless, by 200 BC, the emperor went on his last major campaign, and it wasn't fighting other Chinese peoples this time, but it was the Xiongnu. Now, by all accounts, things were going rather swimmingly at the beginning of the campaign, but after a while, Liu Bang was completely surrounded at Mount Baidong and suffering heavy casualties. It was rather evident that the campaign north was a complete failure, and it was a huge debacle. It looked like the emperor may lose his life. However, one of his top advisors, Chen Ping, basically said to bribe his way out of this, and that's exactly what he did. The imperial treasury that accompanied the emperor on the campaign was given to the leader of the Xiongnu, Chan Yu. And with that, the campaign was over and the emperor managed to stay alive. What evolved from this was basically the Han Dynasty's later emperors following this example and appeasing the northerners. Liu Bang even sent one of his daughters to the Xiongnu as tribute as well. The dynasty would continue this policy of basically paying tribute to keep the northerners at bay with silk, gold, jade, and women. And then this happened for a while, like I said, but it all changed with the fifth emperor, Han Wudi, who I will get to in a few weeks, I hope. But now I am brought to the last point, which this episode is going to cover, which was the ever so tricky business of succession. Liu Bang had many concubines, but his favourite was Lady Qi, and the Empress Dowager Lu really hated her. Well, maybe not so much hated, but she certainly was jealous of her. But it seemed the feelings were felt both ways between the two women. Now again, Confucian scholars tend to paint Empress Lu as a jealous, spiteful, evil woman. However, the truth is more complicated than that. The reason why they do this is basically because after Liu Bang died in 195 BC, Empress Lu basically takes over all the power within the dynasty for a while. Now, according to Confucians, it wasn't a woman's place to do such a thing, hence the bad public relations image the Empress gets. The two women, before Liu Bang died though, were engaged in a bitter rivalry for their two sons to become the next emperor. So of course things were ugly between them. Empress Lu's son was Lin Yang, and Lady Qi's son was Yu Ri. Now by all accounts, Yu Ri was the brighter of the two, and Liu Bang played with the idea of making him the heir to the throne. However, he was really talked out of the idea, as it was clear all of the ministers valued the traditions that the elder brother, which Lin Yin was, should inherit the throne. And more importantly, he was the son of the Empress Dowager. After this, a rift began to drive Liu Bang away from the Empress Lu Zhi, and it was clear scores would be settled after he died, which is indeed what happened. Now don't get me wrong, Liu Bang listened to the advice and made Lin Yin his heir, and he became the emperor after Liu Bang's death. But the fears the old emperor had in regards to his eldest son being unfit to rule were pretty well placed, as his son as emperor was basically a puppet, and his mother, the Empress Dowager Lu, was the one pulling the strings. Her first act, through her son, was to eliminate all competition, which of course meant Lady Qi was pretty much top of the list, followed by her son, Ru Yi. Ru Yi got a relatively quick death through being forced to drink poisoned wine, however Lady Qi's ending was much more gruesome. Liu Zhu had concubine Qi killed in such an unhumane manner. She had Qi's limbs chopped off, eyes gouged out, ears sliced off, forced her to drink a potion that made her mute, and then thrown into a latrine. She called Qi a human swine. Several days later, Emperor Hui was taken to view the human swine and was shocked to learn that it was concubine Qi. He cried loudly and became ill for a long time. He requested to see his mother and said, This is something done not by a human. As the Empress Dowager's son, I'll never be able to rule the Empire. From then onward, Emperor Hui indulged himself in carnal pleasures and ignored state affairs, which probably suited the Empress just fine, as it allowed her to control state affairs and promote the Liu family to compete with the current Liu family in court. And that's that. The Han Dynasty's way to secure power for the next 400 years. There was a little interregnum period in the middle with the new dynasty called the Xin Dynasty, however, it didn't really last long. So moving forward, I think I will discuss the breakdown of the Han Dynasty in these ways. The emperors leading up to Han Wu Di, then a huge episode on Han Wu Di. After the Han Wu Di episode, I will take a break and talk with a podcaster named Death of the Roman Republic, where we discuss and compare the Roman and Han empires who were around at the same time. Afterwards, we will then continue the journey through the Han Dynasty as it begins to falter and break away into three kingdoms. However, next week there will be no podcast episode. And the reason being is that I'm going to be in my wife's hometown next week for another wedding celebration. That's right, I need to do a wedding ceremony in my wife's hometown as well. Otherwise, her family won't see our marriage in Scotland as pretty legitimate. Which I can understand, like, they want to see a ceremony at least. They got to miss it. Now, I could edit episodes in between this period, but I will struggle to upload anything as my wife's hometown is an extremely rural area. And there will be very little in the way of activity from me in the next week. So I hope you can forgive me for spending some quality time with the in-laws over the May holiday, and in all honesty, I could do with the break. So that's it from me, and I hope you've enjoyed this exciting episode of the Chronicler Podcast channel. Thanks for listening.